The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer. David Faber is on assignment. Say goodbye to Q1, longest quarter ever, as B of A recently wrote. We'll be on watch for some rebalancing, plenty of eco data, and a potential record release of oil from the SPR, oil back below 102 as OPEC meets. Our roadmap begins with energy and the oil slide. OPEC stays the course, and the U.S. nears that historic release of reserves. Recession risks, JPM says, not this year. Why the bank says the U.S. is poised to weather the inflation storm. And then meme volatility. AMC's gains for the week have already been cut in half. Let's start, though, with oil under pressure and the president considering huge reserve releases. Jim, they're talking a million a day for 180 days, about 5% of our daily consumption.
Right. I mean, we can easily take our consumption up. We've got a lot of wells that are drilled but are not in production. I've looked at all the SPR releases. Wait one day, buy oil stocks.
Because we did one in November.
Yeah. Well,
the IEA did one.
Right. We've done many years of these, and in every single case, it's been an opportunity to buy oil because it does not have any real impact on the market. By the way, what happens is a lot of our oil companies just immediately take their production, ship it overseas so that you can sell it anywhere. We are still producing probably a million F barrels less than we can every single day. And that's because of a decision by our major oil companies to hold back and return money to shareholders. So those are the things you buy when you get this kind of thing, because that's just immutable. That's what they do. They're looking, most of these oil companies are looking at the curve. It shows that oil is going to be lower this time next year. So why would you ever start drilling now if you know that a year from now it's going to be lower?
Right. Although even the back end of the curve would still be a profitable price.
Oh, my God. Yeah, these guys are sitting there making... It's costing $30, $40 on average.
Net. 80s.
Right. So they all want to, you're going to get a variable dividend for the independents that's probably between 7 and 9%. So you may think that the yield curve, did I mention twos and tens?
Yeah.
Because I like to confuse everybody. And I don't think there's got to be, is every single person confused by it? Because remember, it's predicted 12 out of the 6 recessions, but right. We don't talk about that. But if you think that rates are high, you're going to get a better return by owning the oils, but you got to do it tomorrow, not today, because it'll be down today.
OPEC, of course, meeting as well. They're going to have the next meeting's May 5. Looks like they're going to stick to their about 400K plus boost.
Yeah, I don't understand why we have not been able to have any impact. Yeah, the President Biden has not had any impact on them, but I think that we speak softly and don't carry a stick, and I think that that's opposite of what TR did. I find that we're not effective with some of these allies. It doesn't compute.
Well, we're trying to reach out to the Saudis a bit more.
Yeah.
There is, though, still a huge Russian influence in OPEC Plus.
Absolutely. Russia, it's interesting how much Russia is still considered to be an important country. If you take away their natural gas to Germany, which we will at this time next year, because of the flood of new energy. I was just seeing from Sempra. Sempra sending it with Total announced today. We have gigantic projects that are sending a huge amount to Europe that when I spoke to Sharif Suki, who is from a little company called Tellurian, but he did build Cheniere, Russians will have no leverage this time next year. Now, if the Germans were to recommission some of their coal plants, which they took out, and change their plan to go off carbon, then Russia would not be a factor this year. this year.
All right. Well, Lavrov, for example, going to Delhi today, right, as India continues to buy Russian
they're probably
oil
the worst,
at a discount.
They're probably the worst enemy we have right now when it comes to Russia, which is extraordinary.
The rubles,
because it's democracy.
The ruble's rebound has been driven in part by these oil sales
I know.
The central bank intervention.
Yeah.
But you think we're going to chip away at them.
Paper tiger. It's becoming a paper tiger. We have bad supply chain issues in this country. You have a problem with your car, you're probably not going to get a part. They have supply chain problems in Russia, too, but we've somehow viewed them as when Zhukov decided that let's have a race to Berlin in 1944. I mean, I don't know why we insist, other than the fact that they do have nukes, they look very much like Argentina to me. Now, no one wants to hear that. We sent over 100 of the Switchblades. Now, I saw the Switchblade. I operate a Switchblade. This is AeroVironment. The Switchblade is known as the Widowmaker because it goes up. It's got 40 minutes in, looks at heat signature, and then kills whoever's doing the operating the artillery. This is what's been lacked because right now we only have about a 5-mile range, we meaning Ukraine, to be able to wipe out artillery, but the artillery is far, much further. So we sent 100. Why have we not sent 1,000? It's a great question to me. Why did we initially not send the Switchblade but send the one that only had 5 miles? This is, I think, Jake Sullivan, who's the National Security Advisor. Now, I speak with people in the Pentagon, and they just wish that we didn't have some, like, you know, kind of, like, background of me.
Yeah.
He looks like my background. And believe me, I didn't fight like my father.
Page one of the Times today talks about U.S. and U.K. intelligence suggesting that there are tensions inside the Kremlin. Putin's not getting reliable information. That troops on the ground are...
They don't have the
sabotaging their own operations.
Now, in Chechnya, before Putin took over, the troops in Russia would sell bullets to the enemy in order to make money, and then they'd run. I'm not hearing anything good about this conscripted army. But the United States has decided to not allow Ukraine to go offensive. So they're basically ceding the eastern part. Now, why this is I think it's because Jake Sullivan is, again, Jake Sullivan is like, it's like me running the army. I mean, like, you know, hey, I'd ask my dad. He was in the Sixth Army. Hey, Dad, what do I do? I mean, how about the Pentagon? The Pentagon, which wants to arm Ukraine, why aren't they being consulted? I mean, they're being consulted, but it's all lip service.
Sure.
My sources in the Pentagon are like saying, actually, my sources are pretty good, are saying, like, well, if they listen to us, they could go on the offensive and wipe out Russia because they've got the spare parts, but NATO won't give them what they need. Now, why this is, I mean, I have a totally different narrative from what everybody else is saying, because, I don't know, my father was a decorated veteran and people trust me.
You've been hawkish. But this, I mean, the whole state defense split is a classic executive battle.
Right.
In all administrations.
It always is. It always is. I just keep coming back to the fact that if you think we have a supply chain problem trying to fix your Nissan Infiniti, you should imagine what they have, since nobody's shipping them. I've got pictures of actual supermarkets where there's nothing. Nothing. But is that reported upon? There are protests every day. They're not reported on. Now, in the 1994 Chechnya war, they had a free press because Yeltsin believed in free press. And that's why the war ended, because people saw how many people were dying,
sure,
and realized that there was nothing in the supermarkets. This is a complete blackout. So there are everywhere in Russia are these same problems, but you're not allowed to report on it. But I have people on the ground sending me pictures. There's nothing in the aisles. There's nothing in the feminine hygiene aisle. Remember who sends everything to them? Us. I mean, you know, some of our companies spent years trying to get in the aisles of the supermarkets. Well, they got in there.
Yeah.
Russia doesn't make anything, okay? They make nothing. Why don't people realize that Russia makes nothing? And they're out of tank parts.
A lot's been written about the population's tolerance for that. It's been built up over the years.
Well, you know, in 1944, they lived with everything. They had nothing. But this is not 44, okay?
And you just said to Becky.
It's not 44. Yeah. I mean, why do people, like, the level of belief... Now, they have nukes, okay? And that's, you want to believe in something, they got nukes. They can do chemical because anybody can do chemical. You and I could do chemical. But when it comes to actual, like, cavalry, tank cavalry, they might as well be horse cavalry. But why we decided that we can't go, that Ukraine can't go on the offensive, I'm struggling with that.
As you said, Jim, they have nukes. That's
part
of the calculus.
I'm giving $100,000 tomorrow from my charitable trust to Red Cross for Ukraine. What I wouldn't want to do is to give $100,000 to AeroVironment to send the Switchblade 600, of which, by the way, as again, when I flew the 600, I can fly it, you can fly it.
Obviously, it's been a huge dynamic for the quarter, and we are entering the final trading session of the month and the quarter. It's been a strong March for stocks, but we are on pace, the S&P at least, Jim, for the first quarterly decline in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, when you, we have a lot of companies that really had amazing performance in the fourth quarter. I mean, like someone, when they weren't showing pictures of me being sodomized by gorillas, which I've tried to get limited by Twitter, but so far they seem to think that that's free speech. Not unlike what Elon Musk in the poll, I decided they believe in total free speech. What I'm seeing is people hating me for liking NVIDIA because NVIDIA is not doing well this year. Now, NVIDIA is one of the greatest performers of all time, but NVIDIA represented what a lot of people were doing in the fourth quarter, which is buying these stocks. Those stocks didn't do well, and instead what people did was buy the oils. You know, Nike's a good example. That stock went down to the 120s. It came all the way back.
And I'm sure you read Doug Kass last night. As Home Depot goes, so goes the country.
I met with the Home Depot CFO. They're not doing nearly as bad as people think. By the way, the Walgreens quarter was nothing to write home about.
And we haven't yet mentioned a bunch of the calls, but one of them is Barclays cutting Pulte.
Barclays came in and just slashed all the home. Dallas Fed did this piece about the there was really good came out last night about the giant bubble in housing. Now, how, you know, if you bought a house in the Sun Belt and it was a $400,000 house, you probably paid $500,000. That's probably unsustainable. And I know that the Fed thinks it's unsustainable, and that's what the rising rates, a mortgage rate of 5% is going to cut back. But the affordability now for a home is just miserable in this country.
Well, Barclays' point is that as far as Pulte goes, that builder valuations don't really bottom until you're either exiting a recession or rates peak. And both of those things are probably not close.
That's absolutely true. Now, KBH is $2 above its KBH, which they still like. KBH is $2 above its book value. It sells at 3x earnings, the lowest multiple in the S&P. Well, that means that they're not going to make the estimates, because when you see that, like Bethlehem Steel sold at 2x earnings the year before it went bankrupt. So, you know, now KBH is a very strong company. I'm not saying that, but you're going to see the earnings be a fraction of what people think.
Interesting note out of J.P. Morgan today, not research, but rather the desk. And they argue, Jim, that there'll be no recession in the U.S. this year. They say that $6 trillion in stimulus under both Trump and Biden has been released. More than half of that is not yet spent. Instead, it sits in household and government balance sheets. And in their view, the U.S. is almost uniquely positioned to weather the storm that is inflation right now.
I had paychecks on last night. Marty Musi, 700,000 small and medium-sized business, the strongest it's been in years.
We saw continuing claims. Again, you got to go back to the 60s.
No, I mean, look, it's going to be hard. It's not unlike Steven Seagal. It's Hard to Kill, which was one of his seminal pictures. And I do find that the Fed's got its work cut out for it, if it really wants to slow down this economy, except for housing.
So your terminal rate's in the threes or something like that?
Still pretty good. I mean, look, let's understand, housing indeed punches above its weight. It's only 10% of the economy, but it's possible to listen to Gary Friedman from RH and just say, listen, don't drink milk till late next year, because he's calling for, like, nuclear. I mean, that was as close to, like, a nuclear war. That was Dr. Strangelove. He's got to learn to buy. He's got to stop worrying. He's got to start loving the bomb. That was, like, a very disjointed conversation. I urge everyone to be on that conference call, because I love Gary. And I sent him a nice note after the conference call, but it was like, wow.
He's in the furniture business.
I know, but he's got the guest house. It's going to open up in the meatpacking district in the Great London, the Bethlehem Steel in San Francisco. But he made me feel like, don't even venture outside. Not unlike when I had to stick my head in the cubbyhole during the Cuban Missile Crisis. That's what they made us do in order to prevent nuclear war.
Is that what they did?
For nuclear war, they said if we put our heads in because we were right next to the Wilgrove Naval Air Force Base, where a lot of the planes went to Cuba, we were told, stick our heads in the cubby holes, and no matter what happened, we would live. Now, I think that was probably suboptimal thinking, but that's what we all did. All of our heads were in the cubby hole, but I guess the rest of his body would not be radiated.
No, we don't want to see those drills come back.
No, we don't go back to that.
We're going to watch this final trading session of the quarter. Take a look at futures here. It's going to be actually break even for the quarter on S&P, 47.66. So unlikely that we get above it, but the day is young.
Yes.
More Squawk on the Street straight ahead.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Getting some wire headlines on the tape from Vladimir Putin. Relatively vague here, but he does say that he has signed some decrees on gas for ruble trade and that the buyers have to open ruble accounts in Russian banks. Jim, payments for gas supplies to begin on April 1. They're going to try to leverage what they have to sell.
Well, they propped up the ruble. It's obviously a currency that is your last resort, but as long as the Russians prop it up, I guess you can do something if you want to violate everything that the civilized world is saying. I understand that China is not inclined. In the last 48 hours, China has said, you know what, good luck. We're not in favor of and not against. India continues to buy. There's going to be a surfeit of nat gas there. Semper came out this morning and talked about how they have a deal with Total to send a great deal of natural gas there. LNG is going to be full. There isn't anyone who thinks that the LNG won't overwhelm, our LNG won't overwhelm Europe at this time next year. But it could be sped up if Germany were not more complicit with the Russians by keeping to decommission. One of my guys says, listen, if they would just stop closing the coal plants for 45 minutes, that Germany would not need Russia. The Germans have been uniquely inefficient, and if not, I don't want to say they're complicit because Germany is part of NATO.
Well,
but they're not being great.
Last night, one theory about the president's expected announcement today on the SPR was maybe to condition the market for a ban on Russian energy in Europe, right?
I think they're
foaming the runway in some sense.
I think that Russia, look, I don't think that our country, that many countries are going to be inclined to pay, you know, transferred by rubles. But India, a great democracy, is being very anti-NATO here. Look, there's just countries doing so many crazy things, and none of it's being reported on. I mean, I just spend every hour on this stuff, Carl, and it is just shocking how much natural gas, LNG, we can ship there. But it's shocking also that the Germans are acting as if their 2038 energy plan is still on target. They actually think it's sunny every day there. What a bunch of fools.
I mean, they are trying to get their, they're starting to talk about rationing, right? And telling consumers what will, you know, you heard BASF yesterday say, if we can't get half of what we need, we'll have to stop production.
Ludwigshafen. My family used to be big BASFers from Ludwigshafen. They'll get what they need.
You think so?
Me. Ludwigshafen runs half that country. You should be surprised how powerful BASF is. The chemical companies and the auto companies run, they actually run Germany right now because Merkel's not there. And it is just, I mean, they're in total disarray, the Germans. They're in disarray. They don't know what to do. This new leader, it seems that he's not quite yet doing the right thing.
Look, brand new.
Look, why is Poland, Hungary, Moldova's probably taking more people in than they are.
Yeah.
Moldova.
Remarkable open door for refugees.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like there's so much. And I spend so much time trying to figure out which is the right charity to give for my charitable trust because my distribution. And I, you know, $100,000 is not that much in the world in the scheme of things. But it keeps coming back to the Red Cross because a lot of the countries have not developed. Like, I wanted to give church money to churches in Moldova, but they're just not set up. No one was set up for this refugee crisis. It's really a nightmare. And this is when Germany should step up. But they're Poland stepping up.
Yes, yes, they have. As for nat gas, on track for the best start to a year since 1990. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash. We'll count down to the opening bell on this final day of Q1. Don't go away.
Having a team feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 422 through 428. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
You saw Apple at the top of that list. That's why we're going to turn to on Cramer's Mad Dash.
Yeah, well, I think that Apple, the stories that you're reading about Apple wanting to be bigger in finance are true. I think that if they had their druthers, they'd like to take on directly American Express. It's not clear how much Goldman is involved. They were involved. I think they just want to kind of disintermediate everybody. In typical fashion, let's say you're in Uber and you want to take a trip. They would like that to be on Apple and be seamless. And I think I see more and more of this. Now, the stock had a huge streak. And then when the streak was broken, it was kind of like people said, oh, my, it's like Joe DiMaggio broke after 56. Well, take a look at DiMaggio after. In a couple of days, he went back to that 30-game streak. I think that Apple is a hated stock because right here, a lot of people got short because that's when we learned from the incredibly reliable Nikkei that they were cutting supplies. Now, remember what Apple reiterated? They always say the same thing, which is that, do you think we pick up the phone and say, guys, we are really struggling here, so come back? No, they switch their part maker constantly. You never know. And I know all the CEOs of these companies, and they always say, like, wow, we wish we knew what Apple was doing. And they're like big suppliers to Apple.
There are more headlines today that they are continuing to diversify chip suppliers.
Oh, yeah.
Even some Chinese players.
Oh, yeah. By the way, watch Nokia. Nokia is a winner in Europe, because again, people are trying to really cut back on China, on Xiaomi. Yeah, Xiaomi is another one that's in the crosshairs. We have to start realizing if our president were more attuned with what's going on in the world, everyone wants to go American, but we tend to not be as proud as I think we should be.
Well, invoking the Defense Production Act on battery EV materials, that's going America.
Oh, I thought that was right.
You've been calling for that forever.
Yes, that was also in the wheelhouse of Elon Musk. Don't forget, Elon Musk said one day we would have a giant field of solar panels in northern Colorado, and it would supply the whole country. Well, I think he's a little premature. He said that 5 years ago, but you know,
Most of his calls have been a little premature.
He's premature, but he's getting there. Someone said the other day that he hates me. That is quite untrue. I have developed a back channel to Elon Musk because I've been so idolatrous, if not sycophantic, that it's finally getting through to him. And he's right about Twitter. There is free speech on Twitter for everything, including racism and genocide.
We're going to talk more about Tesla, going to extend their Shanghai production through tomorrow at least.
Look at this. It was 200 points below.
Yep.
He's doing everything right. He has spare parts. All the rest of the industry is like, how does he have spare parts? How's he? Well, because he thought ahead.
Yeah. Logistics. It's all about the logistics. Yeah. We'll get the opening bell in just about 4.5 minutes. And don't forget, you can catch us anytime, anywhere on the Squawk on the Street opening bell podcast. Don't go away.
A year from now, you'll see us move closer to the consumerization of healthcare. We'll have access to our data as patients. We'll be able to make decisions about our health. People are so much more health conscious since the pandemic. We'll be able to say, I want to get my MRI at this location versus that location because it's going to save me and the insurance plan money if I can decide where I want to go and save money. And so I want to make sure that a year from now, we're putting our customers and our patients in the driver's seat.
That's Walgreens CEO Roz Brewer talking to Bertha Coombs about healthcare and the consumer. Company does beat as demand for vaccines helped to boost pharma sales. 159 beats by about 19 cents. Some discussion about a potential Q2 slowdown, Jim, as the COVID demand wanes.
Could happen. I know that was why CVS has been trickling down. The question is, does Roz Brewer have to buy Centene? Does she have to buy Centene because they've got a new CEO, but it could still be bought. What do they do in order to be like CVS? Larry Merlot was initially criticized for all the money he spent on Aetna, but it turned out to be brilliant. It's time for Walgreens to buy the equivalent of Centene.
We'll talk more about M&A in a moment and what's happened to it during the quarter. In the meantime, though, opening bell, CNBC Real-Time Exchange at the big board. It is the defending NBA champions, the Milwaukee Bucks. Owner Mark Lazary doing the honors at the NASDAQ at his Swivel, provider of mass transit solutions, celebrating a listing via SPAC.
I didn't know the Bucks had won the championship. I thought that was still in doubt. It's good to see a little, I mean, maybe that's a little projected.
We are going to get MLB a week from today. That's going to be nice.
Oh, yeah. Finally. Was it the Mets doing it? Because they already won.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, the Mets won.
Okay, all right, good.
Yeah, because they had a pretty good owner there spending a lot of money.
Global M&A, Jim, in Q1, down 29%.
Yeah, well, we've got an FTC head who I think would try to block anything, and you have to take a court case to them. What people don't understand is that the antitrust guy, John Cantor, late of Paul Weiss, is not as anti as the FTC. So, I mean, if you could sue the FTC, if you could try to go against the FTC on a deal, I think you could win because the FTC is not in sync with what the history of cases has been. The case. Yeah. So, look, I know it's going to hurt the Goldmans. Goldman needs it, but you know, Goldman's assured that things are okay. But I do think that you have to really watch this because it's been a major prop. Now, there's fewer deals, thank heaven, so we have less supply. But the demand side was really bolstered by M&A. And now all you're seeing really is private equity deals, yep, trying to pick off little guys,
yep,
but nothing big.
Yeah. Asia was actually down more than North America.
Incredible.
Down 33 versus North America down 28. We're looking at some of the gainers for the quarter, Jim. Thematics, it's energy. Actually, some financials have managed to make the quarter work, maybe not the month.
Right, but I think, you know, Splunk is the idea that it might be a takeover. Now that Doug Merritt was ousted, we don't even know why. Vertex, excellent reporting today by, we did a story. We did a story about pain. Opioid, and how they've got a pain alternative. I don't know if we have a clip, but I thought it was pretty powerful because Vertex, the opioids pretty much wiped out whole companies. J&J stock has moved up tremendously,
yep,
during this period because they've managed to beat the opioid litigation, which I think is really important. But I do think that Vertex, if they really have something that's pain that's not addictive, then kind of like, if I don't want it to be like House of Pain. I'm always, you know, the Empire of,
yes,
Pain, because they said that, Purdue said that they weren't addictive either. But I don't know.
Consumer electronics, Jim. Not only does Morgan Stanley cut HPQ to equal weight, they cut Dell to underweight.
Yeah, I thought that was odd.
They worry about not just consumer demand normalizing, but IT hardware spend amid all the geopolitical uncertainty.
Yeah, like IP hardware spend has been, Dell did not have a good quarter. We had Enrique Lores on the show, on HPQ, saying that business was actually quite strong except for the consumer. Dell is not that consumer, Dell is mostly enterprise. I don't want to go against these calls. Dell's been down because of the last quarter. I do want to say that that HPQ has been adamant that things are good, but then they made that acquisition with Poly, so I'm not so sure whether I really want to step against that downgrade.
And then on top of all of that, you got Barclays cutting AMD to neutral, 115. They still see them as a share gainer, Jim. But again, talking about the risk of end demand weakening. You hate this call?
I said yesterday the Chapel Trust would sell it if it could, sell some. And the reason why is because when you look we've been restricted. When you look at the breakdown of AMD, you've got gaming, which is not so, which we think has weakened. You've got PC, which is weakened, but you've got high performance computing, which is strong. And then you've got the merger with Xilinx, which we don't know how it's going to come out. Xilinx business is slower than AMD, but how quickly can Lisa Su cut what she needs to cut? I'm not against, look, the downgrade. I mean, we were like, you know, we were adamant yesterday at our 10-20 meeting that we would have sold a lot of AMD. Both just to get to our distribution, which I mentioned the money going to humanitarian concerns in Ukraine, but also because we do think that we predicted that someone would downgrade it, and they downgraded it.
We're about there. I mean, do you part of their line is that over time Intel will play some catch up? Are you going that far?
You know, look, I think that Intel has very low end, but they can. You know what they can do? They can flood the market. But with low end, not with high end. The high end PCs, like this PC, because it has Microsoft 11, it's almost like you have to upgrade. Now, Enrico Lores completely dodged that question.
You did ask him that.
Yeah, but there's been ample evidence that the 11, Microsoft 11, needs an upgrade, which is good for AMD and not good for Intel. But people are really wondering about Pat Gelsinger because Pat made some statements when he was in Washington recently indicating that his cash flow is going to go entirely to helping make us more semi-independent from Taiwan, which would therefore make it so that even the dividend would be in doubt, if he is serious about that.
Right.
So I think that they're all system stocks go. I don't like what he's saying, which is he's saying, look, we're going to sell everything. We're going to raise money to be able to buy plants. But I do think the analysts are reacting to an old AMD business. The new Ryzen chip, I think, is doing quite well. But I understand, like, the analysts are just reacting to anything negative. Like, you know, we had that interview yesterday with Micron.
Sanjay?
Sanjay Marotta said everything positive about 5G, not positive about 4G. And everyone decided that what he said was negative for cell phone. It was the opposite. He's saying that 5G is getting stronger. HP said, look, enterprise is getting stronger. But everyone's just hearing consumer, consumer, consumer. So they're downgrading AMD. AMD, Lisa Su will be in there buying every share when this thing settles down.
Right.
But I don't think if you're selling AMD, which I said people were going to do, understand it's a trade to be sold because of what Gelsinger said. Gelsinger was really talking about almost a messianic view of what is going to happen with what he tends to spend. And I don't think the people in Intel are ready for what Pat Gelsinger wants to do in order to be able to make us semi-independent.
You think you should be looking out more for the company and less for the country?
Exactly right. Yeah. And by the way, just to know on that Vertex that Meg Terrell reported, it's not up today. I think that people, because she did a really good story about it. I didn't want to push it because I think what's happened is it already happened. Like a lot of those moves that we put up, they've already happened. So be careful. Don't pile in on those.
Right.
Intel's at 51. I think probably goes to 47. Because if you're downgrading Hewlett and you downgrade Dell, you should downgrade Intel. Because that's who they sell to. But I don't know. People, Pat Gelsinger is incredibly nice. He's a very nice man.
Yes, you've made that clear.
We didn't talk about the PVH
call. I was just going to go there.
Oh, my.
Morgan Stanley cuts to equal weight, 89. It's mostly about the tax rate guidance, Jim.
I know, but they used a term. They were talking about maybe there wouldn't be enough. I mean, they were talking about, like, cash issues. I mean, I was kind of aghast. You know, they have a new CEO, Stefan Larsson, and they don't do TV. Now, previously, Manny Chirico would come and he would tell you everything. Be like, this is going well, this isn't going well. Tommy Hilfiger in this country is not going well, but it's time for Stefan Larsson to come on and refute some of these incredibly dire statements that these analysts are making. And that PVH downgrade was hideous.
Yeah, RL is going to be taken down in sympathy. We'll watch PVH. We talked about it all week.
Well, that was like, they used the term impairing. When I see the term impairing, what that says to me is, look out. Now, they wanted that stock lower. Stefan Larsson must come on. He has to. Now, we often talk about, like, who comes on when times are good or bad. Well, Manny came on. But to Stefan Larsson, I think one of the reasons why the stock is so bad is because people are very circumspect about his work. Now, Ralph Lauren, they're doing well, but you're absolutely right. That's just a completely down because of what PVH is doing. Now, Patrice Louvet is doing exactly the opposite. But I think that this apparel group all trades together.
Yeah. Cruise lines, CDC removing their most stringent travel warning. NCLH, that's more than a one-month high here, Jim.
Well, look, I believe that you've got to think about Disney. Disney has made no, you know, Disney owns a lot as a fleet. And they did that big meeting yesterday, 2 days ago on Disney World. I want people to start thinking about them as being back in the business of cruise. Frank Del Rio at Norwegian says that bookings are really good for next year. I know that I want to do a cruise for the investing club. I do.
That'd be amazing.
No, I think it would be fabulous. Lou Rukash used to do them. I've reached out to Frank Del Rio and said, listen, I want a ship. 3-day cruise where we talk about stocks. I would do it all day and all night.
What would the route be? Do you know? Where would you want to go? Does it matter? Bahamas? Gorda?
No, all I want is like they do with those electronic music.
Or Fish or Wilco or Weezer. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. Look, I'm happy to go. I'm happy just to kind of circle around. But I want the opportunity to have a cruise for people who want to talk stocks and also want to go to Vegas, of course. And every one of these I'm going to do because I don't care. We have to talk stocks to everybody who wants to talk stocks. That's what the club is about.
No masks.
And it's cruise. When Lou Rukash, shortly before he died, he said, you know what you need to do? When you really get to where you have to be, you have to do stock cruises. Well, we're there. The club is going to go on a cruise.
That is fabulous. I assume you could do a live shot from there at least, right? We'll have you on.
Oh, no, absolutely. They've got terrific Wi-Fi, and they can do whatever they want. Frank Del Rio is all set. We just need to get dates. Can you imagine how much fun would it be to just talk stocks? Get a couple of CEOs who actually know about the stock market.
Yeah.
Get a couple of market technicians. You may have to be enrolled. I don't know. My wife is on board. She says, listen, cruises are safe. Let's go.
It's been a long time coming, Jim. As for Disney itself, Citi today reiterates a buy after a series of notes about the management meeting earlier in the week, but we're back down to 140.
Yeah, and you know, it's like I tried to get that guy, I got to just some of those have Moffitt Nathans in there with a, Mike Nathans, it's time. And he kind of comes with an eh, you know. I think people are making a mistake. I think that there's a belief that the immersive experience that they're going to do doesn't matter. I think the company's very frustrated. I think they thought that they had a good meeting, but nothing seems to be able to move Disney. Maybe it's time for ESPN to stand up and be counted. Go gambling. They have refused.
They have not done
gambling. I guess they're afraid of Jimmy, the legend of Jimmy the Greek. They ought to go in. They got to go all in. Great 30 for 30.
Yeah. Before we go to break, take a look at the bond report. We did mention jobless claims, 202K, and continuing claims, the lowest since the 1960s. Personal income was in line. Spending was a little weak as we keep our eye on consumer appetites right now. 10-year yield back to 2.34. We're back in a moment.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street. Rick Santelli here live at CME HQ with breaking news. Our March read on Chicago PMI, expected to be 57, a better number, 62.9, well above expectations, well above sequential 56.3 in the rearview mirror. Now, I could say it's the highest level all the way back to this January when it was 65.2, but that really doesn't do justice to the notion that we have reversed a bit, and that is a very good sign. Interest rates have started to creep up. 10-year note yields have been down every day this week, but we do see 2-year and 3-year, the very short maturities right now, with higher yields, lower prices on the day they just flipped. Squawk on the Street will return after these messages.
If Congress fails to act, we won't have the supply we need this fall to ensure the shots are available free, easily accessible for all Americans. Americans are back to living their lives again. We can't surrender that now. Congress, please act. You have to act immediately. The consequences of inaction are severe. They'll only grow with time.
That is the president yesterday pressing Congress to approve emergency COVID funding. McConnell's doing an event today, Jim, with Punchbowl, saying what they want to do is pay for the package, but they might skinny it down from 15 to 10.
Well, one of the things that is just sadly dysfunctional is that those of us who've looked into this can't get any clarity from NIH or CDC about the actual booster that's supposed to happen, whether you should take it now. How long can you wait between the last shot? So literally, I mean, I've been trying to figure this out. It's somewhat selfish to figure out when I can take it, but no one. There have been no guidelines from the CDC about when you can take the booster versus not. There are a lot of doctors who are concerned that you're taking the booster too soon after taking the earlier. So I think if we got clarity in the actual shot, we'd get much more clarity on the package. But the president doesn't really speak to the CDC. He doesn't speak to the NIH. NIH is often at odds with the CDC. This has continued since the first month of the crisis.
Huge lack of data. We're relying on the Israelis once again.
That's all we have.
The Times even suggested this week, you know, in their article about whether or not to get it, maybe time it to your travel this summer. Literally saying, if the duration is that short, maybe you wait until the fall or the summer or fall.
I didn't bring a coin because of people don't use change anymore, but it certainly would be as authoritative as the CDC.
Yes.
The CDC, by the way, in that interview on 60 Minutes, it's shocking. She cannot get data from our country, so they use Israeli data.
Right. Directionless to a large degree.
Yeah, everyone's nice. I've dealt with all of them.
Yes.
They have that. They're like Pat Gelsinger.
Yeah.
They're nice. And I think that, like my ma said, if you're nice, that's all that matters.
Let's move on to some developments regarding Amazon and the ongoing push to unionize. Deirdre Bosa joins us with more on that this morning. Hey, Dee.
Hey, guys. Well, this is a key day for the small but growing unionization drive over at Amazon. Two elections, one at an Alabama warehouse, another at a Staten Island warehouse. Those are wrapping up. Workers in Bessemer, Alabama, they voted for the second time here on whether to join the RWSDU. This is a do-over after the National Labor Relations Board found that Amazon improperly interfered in the union contest last spring. Now, some of our audience, they may recall the controversy over that first vote. That one hinged on a warehouse mailbox. Amazon said that it was meant to make voting convenient. Organizers said it made workers feel like their votes were monitored. That one, though, went overwhelmingly in Amazon's favor. Their turnout this time was actually lower, roughly 39% versus the 55% last spring. Both were mail-in ballots. They just need a majority. Now, the public portion of the latest vote count, that's expected to begin as soon as this afternoon. We will be watching it. Meanwhile, in-person union voting at the Staten Island warehouse, that finished yesterday, with ballot counting expected to begin today as well. And guys, there is also a third warehouse in Brooklyn that is expected to vote later this month. So what began as one small movement in Bessemer, Alabama, that has now gained traction. It still, however, makes up a tiny proportion of Amazon's now more than 1 million strong U.S. workforce. And even with a win at any of these locations, Amazon is likely to appeal. But this does, guys, represent the company's biggest labor challenge ever here in the U.S. and could threaten its famous efficiency. Carl, Jim, Bezos has said in recent years that now they want to be the world's number one employer. So this is certainly a challenge to that.
Yeah. Jim, what do you think? How much do they suffer from an efficiency standpoint if a lot of this happens at scale?
Well, we know that the union work rules are what everything is about. This is the same case with Starbucks, too. If you can't tell your employees when they work, then you're really not able to have much of an ability to be able to move product or move coffee. And I think the unions will be in charge of time that you need to work. And that would be dreadful for Andy Jassy.
And that's just a U.S. picture, right?
Yeah.
They got Europe to about as well.
You know, look, one of the problems was, you know, Starbucks does indeed have unionized places in the ones that they franchise. But if you can't control the work rules, no one wants to work certain shifts. So you can just say, listen, I'm not going to work that shift. And Amazon would not be able to say, yes, you must work it. So that's what at stake with union is time that you have to work.
Our thanks to Dee. We're going to watch developments in New York.
We have more on the
Alabama
tech check.
I imagine we will.
Because she's doing amazing work. This is a very important story because one of the reasons why Amazon works so well is because people work when Amazon says you must work.
Let's get to Jim and stop trading today.
Well, look, I'm taking a very hard look at Boeing. Okay, now Boeing is owned by the Charitable Trust. There's some confusion. Yesterday they had an order from China Southern Max, okay? But it was not a real order. 39 planes was not a new order, but simply a confirmation. Now, some people would argue, well, wait a second. It's good that they confirmed rather than canceled. I like that. Ryanair interested in buying some. ASL wants 20 converted freighters. The Ryanair is interesting because Ryanair had previously blasted Boeing and said, we're not playing. So these are positives as a whole mosaic for Boeing. Again, my Chapel Trust owns it, CNBC Investing Club will talk about it at the 10-20 meeting. But I don't want anyone to think that the China Southern order is new. It was not new. Okay. People got very excited.
Michael O'Leary said he'd be willing to pass on the 10 following this dispute over pricing. We have to wait for Boeing to be in kind of a headspace for talking about MAX 10s. At the moment, they're dealing with the backlog, 777, design delays, certification delays.
Well, we've been selling some of the Boeing. We have a nice profit in it, not huge, but just because we're hoping for more from Boeing at this point. Certainly hoping a 787, some good news, but at least the Chinese didn't cancel the order.
I mean, I'll tell you what, it's not the picture you envisioned when travel returned in earnest.
No, we bought Boeing because we felt that this was, you know, you could have bought Booking.com or Airbnb. Now, Airbnb's been tough, but Boeing has been stepping on its own toes for a long time. We're all hoping, great American company, that it returns to its greatness.
How about tonight?
All right. I'm going there. I'm going to find out whether we're blocking cyber threats from, there's been no cyber activity, it seems. I think what's really happening is that we're winning. So I'm going to ask Nikesh Arora. You know, that the Russians, the all-powerful, brilliant Russians with their 2,000 people in one room are supposed to be able to shut down our country. So far, Russia should worry about having stuff in their supermarket shelves.
Right.
They look worse than the Dollar General I went to at just open, where, like, hey, guys, where's the stuff? And they ask you, well, would you like to work here? I'm telling you, Russia, it's Argentina.
Yep.
It's Argentina with nukes.
Geologically rich,
with nukes.
Operationally poor.
Yep. We've decided, we've made them think that they're 1944. They are not 1944. There is no Zhukov, okay? No Zhukov.
Jim, we'll see you at 6. Mad Money, of course, with Jim Cramer, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Having a team feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.